Radio 92.3 95.3 AM 1620. Good Monday, Mernin-tyrians. It's Pensacola Expert Panel. I've had four shots of espresso and no food, so that's where I'm at this morning. Meg is still feeling a little under the weather, so she's going to take another day just to get fully recovered, and I'm going to flail about in this studio again this morning. My name is Jake Walker. Thank you so much. Please don't send any hate mail to the station for anything I might do or say this morning, because I am totally hopped up on caffeine. All right, here we go. One of my favorite segments I used to do when I was on the show was talking to the great folks over at NAS Whiting Field. You know, you're driving up the highway there and you pass NAS Whiting Field and you just keep on going. You're like, I'm going to go get some food somewhere in Pace or Milton. You just don't really think about everything that goes on there. That is actually the cradle of naval aviation right there in our backyard. And right. In the studio this morning, I have Jamie Coffey. How you doing this morning?
Good morning, Jake. Thanks again for having us. It's really nice to see you again. And I hope Meg is recovering and taking care of herself, but it is great to see you in studio this morning. You know, we talked about wanting her to take care of herself, and, you know, there's just a lot going on in the world. So I'm going to do a PSA for sure.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got to take care of ourselves. So one of the programs that the Navy supports is suicide prevention, so suicide awareness and prevention. So that's just something I wanted to bring up this morning as I got on the water this weekend and decided to take a couple of hours. Lee had a birthday last week, so we rented a boat, a little 45-footer, and got on the water on Saturday and just decided to take a breath. And that's what sometimes it's all about. Sometimes we have to take care of ourselves. And as you know, I'm an Air Force reservist part-time, so I have a support role in the Air Force. And one of the things they talk about is fitness. So physical fitness, right? And spiritual fitness and mental fitness. And so that's just something I wanted to bring up, that, you know, life can get crazy and negativity sneaks up on you. It really is sneaky. I always say that negativity is sneaky. So don't let that sneak in. Take care of yourself. Take care of your family and your friends and your coworkers. And sometimes that means just taking a moment and having some fun. We live in Northwest Florida where there's just fun on the water. There's fun in the sun. There's just so much to do here. Get out. Get on a trail. Go for a walk in your neighborhood. Get some sun. Get some of that salt air in your lungs. We've just got to do it sometimes. So that's my PSA for this morning on Suicide Awareness and Prevention Month of the month of September, is to take care of yourself and take care of others. So let's just jump in. I'm going to intro who's in the studio with me. We're going to talk all things helicopters today. So we've got the commanding officer of HT-28, Commander James POTUS Gelsinon. Did I say that right, Commander?
You got it right.
Great. So we call him POTUS. So first, real quick, can you give us a little story on your call sign? What is POTUS for?
Yeah, so POTUS stands for President of the United States.
Of course.
Obviously the acronym there. So I actually got my call sign just kind of by dumb luck, to be honest. So
okay.
I was on my first deployment over in Kuwait, actually. So I kind of split my time between Kuwait and Iraq. We're flying medical evacuation missions over there.
Right.
And it was actually right after Obama got inaugurated. So I had a little more hair at that point in my life. And, you know, we call it the quarterdeck, but it's right when you walk into the unit. Mm-hmm. And so you had the, you know, pictures of the chain of command. So they had a picture of Obama there. And I don't know if the sun was just right. It was the right time of day. But a couple of the other pilots, you know, I was sitting there talking to our commanding officer in there. And I went back into the ready room and somebody just started calling me POTUS. And it, for whatever reason, it just stuck ever since then.
That's so great. That's great. So that's your call sign and you have many titles. You are the commanding officer, but real quick, let's get into another title. You are married and dad is also a title.
Dad's a title. Yeah. So I have four kids. I have a 17, 15, well, recently 13. He just had a birthday last Monday.
Okay.
And 10-year-old. So two girls, two boys.
Okay.
We live down in Gulf Breeze, and it's just a great, it's great, great kids, you know, super, super fortunate.
The Gelsinons are busy.
Wow.
They are busy.
You must have got started early. You don't look old enough to have.
You don't.
Yeah, well, the crazy thing, my oldest daughter was born when I was here in Pensacola in flight school. So she was born, I was actually in HT, so in helicopter training.
Okay.
And she was born at the Naval Hospital of Pensacola. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so we got a, and I'm originally from Tucson, Arizona. My wife's from Portland, Oregon. But it's pretty awesome that, you know, we have a lot of ties here to this local area. And all our kids have been born in different places. But our oldest, you know, it's Pensacola's is home for her. So
absolutely. Now, how long have you been in the Navy?
So I've been in a little over 19 years.
Okay.
So I went to the Naval Academy, commissioned in 2006, and then came down here for flight training. So yeah, a little over 19 years. So it's been a fun ride.
Yep, absolutely. Almost two decades. Have you always wanted to fly?
You know, I think I have. My grandmother worked for TWA, and I think I got on a plane. I was probably five or six. And it was just like this view looking out the window into like a whole different world. You know, I remember like we took off out of Tucson and like we lived pretty close to the airport and I saw my house like from the plane. And it was just, you just see the world from a completely different perspective. And I think ever since then, I've always just been kind of enamored with flying and with aviation. So,
okay. So we're going to continue on with, I just want to talk about your career a little bit before we get started about all the things that are going on with our helicopters at NAS Whiting Field in Milton. But what is your airframe now? What did you start? Because you were here and here in helicopter training. And then what was your platform or is your platform, I should say?
Yeah. So I flew after flight training. So you'll select, obviously, for the Navy at the time, we had three platforms. Now it's really down to two. But I flew the MH-60 Sierra. So 60 Sierra is essentially an same airframe as an Army Blackhawk. We have some different systems that are on board and some modifications that they've made to the airframe for shipboard use. Like we can fold the tail and fold the rotor blades back just for space considerations. But it was, I mean, it's amazing. It was amazing airframe to fly. Very versatile.
Right.
We did search and rescue. I did, like I said before, medical evacuation was one of the missions. We do close air support. I also did airborne mine countermeasures, so looking for naval mines.
Very cool.
We did vert rep, which is really just logistic, moving, you know, food and cargo and other things.
So it's people.
People, yeah. Yeah, we call it PMC or, PAX, mail and cargo.
Yep,
PAX, cargo. Yeah, so it's a very versatile platform and a lot of fun to fly.
Absolutely. Can you give us a few of your highlights from flying that aircraft or from your career? We were just talking before we came into the studio, and you said that you were on the Stennis. So everybody's got stories, and especially when you've done the ship life. So I think we jumped into that even before we jumped into the studio. So can you give us a little highlight?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so flying flying in the HSC community or the Sierra community, I mean, you get a little bit of everything, and I'm probably indicative of that. So my first tour was out in Guam. So after we left Pensacola and I got my wings, we went to San Diego for some training to get qualified in the airframe. And then I went out to Guam for my first squadron.
Oh, Guam is beautiful.
Yeah, it was an amazing HSC 25 is a squadron out there, the Island Knights. And it was phenomenal people, phenomenal flying. But so you're there at, you know, in this island in the middle of the Pacific, you know, and you're the only helicopter asset out there. So we'd get search and rescue calls all the time, which isn't like if you're in a larger fleet concentration area, it's not typical. If you get one, it'd be pretty unique.
Mm-hmm.
Out in Guam, it was like, you know, every week there was something going on where you could go out and help somebody.
Gotcha.
I'd say the highlights, I went out. So my career was a little unusual in the sense that both of my deployments were over on land flying essentially Army medevac missions. We were supporting Army infantry divisions in Iraq. I was in Basra. And that was extremely rewarding. I think, you know, when you get a call, you realize, hey, we're getting a call and people are excited, but you also have to temper it with the fact that this might be, we're getting a call because it might be the worst day that somebody has ever had in their life, you know? So, but to be able to help people in need, we had one where we had a local national, a Kuwaiti who had a heart attack on the base. So he worked on the base in Kuwait, and we actually medevaced him down to a local hospital there in Kuwait City.
Yeah. Time is everything. Time.
Yeah.
The response time has to be quick because, you know, every second counts, every minute counts.
100%. Yeah. And medevac, they call it the golden hour. So statistically, if you can get somebody, even if it's a, you know, very serious injury, if you can get somebody to competent medical care within an hour, their chances of survival are pretty high. right? Okay. Up in the 90 percentile or higher. Mm-hmm. As soon as you get outside that hour, it kind of exponentially decreases. So
yeah,
time is, whether, you know, especially for search and rescue and for medevac, time is probably the most important consideration.
Wow.
So that was a probably a highlight for that first portion. I was an instructor, so I instructed new students in the Sierra. So folks that just came from flight school, we'd get them trained up in the airframe. That was in Norfolk, Virginia. So that was a lot of fun. Right. Where you get to, it's a bit like an apprenticeship in aviation. So you get to, you know, develop your craft, and then the cool thing is you get to pay it forward as an instructor and kind of teach the next generation.
Absolutely.
How to operate this airframe.
Yep. I mean, we've talked about that in the past too, where we have, you know, sim instructors out at NAS Whiting Field, and we have a great number of retirees that have done 20 years. We have former Commodores and Deputy Commodores and Chiefs of Staff, and I mean the full gamut, that have decided to retire and then still go on to teach because they absolutely love doing that and giving back. And it's just it's a great full circle moment at NAS Whiting Field, watching them come from students to instructors, from the fleet, then leading those instructor pilots and leading that syllabi, right? And then they retire from big leadership level, and then they go back to instruction. It's like, you know, going back to the basics and teaching them everything that they need to know when it rains and getting on instruments. And it's really cool to see the full circle at NAS Whiting Field.
Yeah, 100%. And we tell the students, like, you have to be brilliant at the basics. You know, obviously here that we're giving them kind of the basic building blocks to go out and how do you operate an aircraft, right? How do you deal with an emergency? How do you memorize emergency procedures and effectively go through a checklist while you're flying?
Right.
But it's also preparing them for much more complex airframes and complex environments that you're going to fly in. You know, it's and here you're preparing them. This is the first step for really getting prepared for combat, right? And that's what we're here to do.
Yeah.
Hopefully it never comes to that. But you know, it's not just here to deliver the mail necessarily. Like you're training them to go out in harm's way,
right?
To do the job that you're assigned, and then to come back safely, right? And to bring your crew back safely. And that's the most important thing. So
yeah, we're proud to say we're training warfighters, because we are. That's exactly what we're doing. You know, and it's said NAS Pensacola is the cradle of aviation, but NAS Pensacola and NAS Whiting Field are training warfighters for national defense. And it's a great, it's just an honor to be a part of that. It really is. Okay, so let's jump into HT-28 stuff.
Yeah.
So obviously, everybody knows now that we have a new helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the old helicopter. So let's talk about the 57 for a second. Do I hear that there is a sundown ceremony as we're transitioning away from those aircraft?
Your sources are good.
Good.
So this week is actually kind of the culmination. It's of almost essentially 57 years of operating this airframe, which is ironic because it's the type model series is the TH-57 Bravo and Charlie. So
all right, 57 and 57.
Yeah. So the if you go to the Naval Aviation Museum, there's a helicopter it's actually hanging up kind of in the rafters. But that's a TH-57 Alpha model.
Okay.
So it's an orange and white.
I think it's over near the atrium, I believe.
It is, yeah. Yep. So it's right by the atrium. And that I think it last flew in 1977. I think if you were to open the door to the cockpit, there's still an ashtray in there.
I wasn't even born yet.
Yeah, so that was the Alpha model.
Okay.
And then right now, we still fly the Bravo and the Charlie. So our students, the ones that have gone through the 57, you start off in the Bravo, which is about as basic a turbine helicopter as you could possibly get. So there's
right.
no like flight control system. There is a hydraulics. It's hydraulically boosted, but it's really just kind of you and the machine. So it's probably, for our students, the first helicopter they ever fly is also the most difficult helicopter that they're ever going to fly.
Makes sense.
But it's an amazing little airframe. And the Bravo just had its last flight last week. So last Wednesday was the last flight of the Bravo.
Last student to go through there?
Yeah. Well, actually, we had some instructors that flew the last ones. Yeah,
that's amazing.
It's kind of cool.
Oh.
And then the Charlie, this week, we're going to have our last student event ever. After almost 34,000 rotary wing pilots have come through the pipeline on Wednesday, so we're gonna have that flight up at Whiting.
History in the making.
Yeah. And then Friday, we're going to fly the very last, like the legitimate last flight. We're going to fly it down to the Naval Aviation Museum at Pensacola. So we're going to be landing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I think that's open if anybody, obviously the museum's open to the public. So if anybody wants to come, they're more than welcome.
So that's next Friday.
This Friday, the 19th at 1 o'clock, we'll be landing. Out there's kind of a bleachers out on the taxiway there. So, it'll be a last flight. We'll have a really, really short, quick ceremony, but just to say a few words on it and then, to give the logbook over to the museum, and then that aircraft will be on display.
All right. I want to let everybody know you can text or call in if you have any questions. 437-1620. You are listening to Pensacola Expert Panel here on News Radio 92.3. My name is Jake Walker. I'm just sitting here fascinated listening to this. I know you are too. So let us know if you have any questions. 437-1620. I got Jamie Coffey in the studio and James POTUS Gelson on, right?
You got it. Yes, sir.
All right. And Friday at 1 at NES there, they're going to be having that ceremony. Very, very cool. Very cool.
Yep. I'm going to write sundown that down. Sundown ceremony is, I think, what we're going to call it,
yeah,
right?
Sounds
sundown
great.
Sundown ceremony for the TH-57 as we are now 100% flying the new helicopter, the TH-73. Mm. Okay, so since we're going to transition into the new helicopter and all things helicopters, want to mention the fleet fly-in because it's coming up around the corner. It's something very exciting out at NAS Whiting Field that we do on an annual basis through the NHA, which is the National Helicopter Association. Can you give us a little sneak peek as to what the fleet fly-in is going to do for the students this year?
Yeah, so fleet fly-in is, like you said, it's an annual event. It's an opportunity for the fleet really to come and also to bring their hardware, right?
Okay.
So they're going to, it might be a little bit louder up in Milton and Pace. it's going to be October 6th through the 10th.
Okay.
So right now we have Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard helicopters and tilt rotor aircraft they're going to come in. So on the slate we have, my old aircraft, the Sierra, will be here. We're going to have the Romeo. So there's two variants of the 60, the Romeo and the Sierra.
Okay.
Really kind of the rotary wing workhorses of the Navy. And then the Marine Corps, we're going to have a Cobra, a Huey. We'll have some Ospreys, which are amazing machines. We're going to have some 53s, which are called big iron. So
yes.
big aircraft coming in. And then the Coast Guard right now working to get an H-65 and also an H-60. So kind of their workhorses on the search and rescue front. So this one, it's not open to the public, but what it is, it's really geared towards our students and our instructors.
Right.
So, helping them see what they're going to fly next. So nobody joins Naval Aviation just to fly an orange and white aircraft, right? Like this is a necessary part of developing those, that skill set. But the goal is to go fly a gray aircraft, right? Or an orange and white if you're the Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Coast Guard a stamp on the side of it as well. So they're
going to
do the real thing, but we'll have fleet here. There's going to be some briefs that we'll give the students, which I think will be very informative for them. And then also just being able to interact with folks that they're going to work with, their next job and see the airframes, see the personnel that they're going to be operating with.
Okay. Well, good. We're also going to have, I'll throw it out and we'll do it a media advisory. We will designate about 2 hours on a media day when all those aircraft are when those birds are resting, everybody's walking around getting to know the crews and that aircraft inside and out. We're going to do a media day and have them out too so that they can highlight and we can share some of the what happens behind the fence line.
Yeah.
So that'll be really cool. The other thing I'm excited about is normally the fleet fly-in is usually housed right back to back with the NAS Pensacola Air Show, and this year it is not. So the fleet fly-in is a couple weeks prior to NASP's very big air show. So we're not really competing this year. So I'm super excited about that, and super excited to get the media out so that we can share all this information with the community. So just like NAS Pensacola does for the air show. So it's a great opportunity for NAS Whiting Field and for Training Air Wing 5 to kind of show off what we do in those with those what those heavy aircraft do. I am super excited to watch them. So that's just a heads up to the community that you will see different aircraft in the air during that week in October from the 6th through the 10th. Okay, so speaking of gray aircraft, kind of want to talk about our new paint schemes for our aircraft for Training Air Wing 5. So we've got some changes coming up as far as paint scheme goes, right?
Yeah, so there's a few. You may see a few. I think most people are used to seeing, you know, orange and white helicopters flying around. There's a few, not a ton, but a few that are gray. And they're not. It's not a complete change to the paint scheme. The vast majority are still going to be orange and white.
Okay.
Yeah, just a few. And same thing on the T6 side. They have a really cool blue blue aircraft.
It's beautiful.
And so, yeah, it's kind of harkening back to like a World War II style paint scheme. So it's a
homage
awesome.
To the heritage of the I just absolutely love that history part. So as these aircraft, as you know, everybody needs, they need paint, everybody. The aircraft need paint. So they will be transitioned. So every single time, rather than those orange and white will come into the paint shops, they're going to get that new paint scheme.
No,
I
don't think they're going to all, they're not going to go to like an all gray.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's
so
just,
we're going to have a mix.
Yeah. I think you're going to have a few of them that are gray, but the lion's share, I'd say probably 95% are going to still be the orange and white. So,
okay. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Okay. So I have to ask now, even though you're the commanding officer, I know you're busy. Now, do you still get a chance to fly when you're commanding?
I do. And that's been an amazing part of the job, because the further you get along in the Navy, typically like the less flying you do, kind of the more administrative aspects of your job kind of take priority. And it's not that there's not administrative jobs associated with what I'm doing, but yeah, I'm still in the mix. I think I flew 35 hours last month.
Great.
I was out, and they're all, you know, all instructing students, which really at the end of the day, that's what this is all about. It's important to be good at the administration. Mm-hmm. But the rubber kind of meets the road when you're in the aircraft teaching a student and helping them to develop the skills that they need to go be successful at the next level.
Right.
And ultimately that's why we exist, is to get the next generation of naval aviators prepared for the fleet and for the challenges that await out in the fleet. You know, I flew a bunch of night vision goggle flights. I flew some formations, we call them contact flights, but it's really just kind of the blocking and tackling of helicopter flying, right? Just taking off, landing, dealing with emergency procedures. We'll do a maneuver called an auto rotation where we'll actually take the twist grip is really how we ask for full power from the engine.
Okay.
And so in flight, we'll actually take the twist grip and roll it to idle. So it's the engine's still on. It's just producing kind of negligible power for you.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Mm-hmm.
We can't keep flying around. We got to figure out a place to go. So
you got to move.
Yeah. So it's pretty fun. You know, if you do it correctly, it's a little more anticlimactic, but it's teaching them like, hey, things can go wrong in the aircraft and you can still keep your wits about you. You can recover and you get the aircraft safely on deck, right? So, and that's the whole point. You're taking a complex process, complex environment, and you're breaking it down so into manageable pieces so that you can accomplish the mission and do it safely.
Man, love helicopters. I love T6s too, but I love helicopters. Rotary is super, super cool, and it's an amazing feat to keep it in the air.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun too. It's more kind of three-dimensional flying.
So. Yeah.
I got to interject this really quick. I got to ride in a helicopter going through New York. We buzzed the Statue of Liberty. We went all through. I mean, it was the craziest thing ever that I got to do, and it was the most fun I've ever had in my life. I'll never forget it. It was amazing. I was scared to death, but man, it was the most fun I've ever had.
What a fun ride.
That was so cool.
Helos.
So cool. Yeah. Helicopters. You guys do it. It blows my mind what you guys do, and you're just like, oh, yeah. We're just taking something up in the air with a big blade on it, and we're just flying through the sky. It's just nothing to you guys. It's awesome.
Kind of pinch myself. Thanks a lot for having me on today.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for the work you do, man. Thanks for keeping us safe, guys.
I appreciate it.
Anything you want to add real quick?
Well, just a reminder that Fleet Flying is on October 6th all the way through the 10th, and be looking in September. Lots of events coming up, lots of observances.
Thank you.
Thanks
all right, good to see you.
State Papa investigators match suspect Tyler Robinson's DNA to DNA discovered on a screwdriver and a towel wrapped around the weapon believed to have been used to assassinate Charlie Kirk, said FBI Director Kash Patel. But is Kirk's murder part of a larger conspiracy? Deputy FBI Director Dan Bongino earlier on America's Newsroom.
We as an FBI, our team, along with our state and local partners, are looking into that. We have a lot of technical capabilities, a lot of good investigative capabilities.
Fox's Garrett Tenney in Utah.
Officials tell us...